Blog Talk Radio.
Today we are discussing the marketing side of Agile, Secrets for Success with Ron Brown of At Brown Company. Today is the year anniversary of our first Global Product Management Talk Twitter chat.
Yay.
We began a year ago, February 7th. I had put out a tweet saying, hey, we need to have a Twitter chat to discuss product management issues. It would be nice to have a community to discuss issues internationally. And Adrian Tan of At Brandmates in Australia tweeted back saying, this is a great idea. There is a great community of product managers in Australia. They are using social media and they would like to collaborate. So from there, we got an immediate lineup of product management experts, people who have written books, starting with Stephen Haynes, who wrote the Encyclopedia for Product Management, the Product Manager's Desk Reference. A great lineup of speakers. We have done this every week except for holidays, and over 40 Twitter chat. We started recording our discussion because the speakers have a lot to say that was difficult to tweet out. And so we've done over 30 podcasts. And after the event, the tweets are captured in a transcript. The podcast is edited and placed on iTunes. It's available in the Android market. For streaming, it's available from Blog Talk Radio, and we have covered a lot of ground. You can find out more about our weekly chats, who the upcoming speakers are, and get access to our past events at our website at www.prodmanagementtalk.com. Also, in honor of our anniversary of a year, we have the Association of International Product Marketing Management has joined us to sponsor us. Let me tell you about them and thank them for their support. The AIPMM is the world's largest organization of product management and product marketing professionals. They put out trainings, they have a certification, they provide value to members and professional networking opportunities. Their membership benefits include the National Product Management Educational Conference, regional conferences, and Agile Certified Product Manager, Certified Product Manager and Certified Product Management credentials, where individual members demonstrate their level of expertise. For more information concerning the AIPMM, go to www.aipmm.com. Welcome, Nick. With me on the podcast, Nick Koster, who will be co-host today of BrainMate, as well as our speaker, Ron Brown. And I'd like to tell you a little bit about them. Our speaker today, Ron Brown, is a successful startup CEO with an extensive background in technology and consumer marketing. He started his career at Nestle, then moved to international ad agencies, J. Walter Thompson and BBDO. At J. Walter Thompson, he managed the HP Computers and Printers business. And as VP of Corporate Marketing at Wise Technology, he gained global channels, distribution, and corporate marketing experience. As president of eFax.com, he built one of the fastest growing consumer internet sites. Brown is also a patent holder and author of the book titled Anticipate, the Architecture of Small Team Innovation and Product Success, available on Amazon, iTunes, Barnes & Noble, and Kobo, and today to our most frequent tweeter, so you have a chance to win his book. Also joining me, Nick Koster is a co-founder of BrainMate, who is passionate about the benefits of putting the customer before technology and building products and services that delight the buyer and user. Nick has been developing and managing products for over 15 years. In the process of this journey, he's developed a deep understanding of the way the different technologies fit together and is always amazed at the new and exciting ways that people use them. Since joining BrainMates, he has consulted to clients whose products include legal accounting software, implantable medical devices, fashion, personal training, pay TV services, and financial services. He enjoys bringing together product managers from different industries and working with them to help deliver market-driven product innovation. Thank you.
Thank you, Cindy.
I want to mention that this is a Twitter chat, and we are conversing using the hashtag PRODMGMTTALK. Always, we invite people to join us in the discussion room, I suggest using tweetchat.com. It's very easy. It filters out everything but the hashtag you want to follow. When I look out into the room, I see that our colleagues at AIPMM are in the room, as well as John Newberry, who has become a frequent participant, and he is joining us from Leicestershire, UK. Hi, John. Today's focus is on the marketing side of Agile, Secrets for Success with Ron Brown. Ron Brown wrote the book on secrets that leading companies know that you probably don't. He says that leading companies bring in over twice the revenue from new products as their less successful peers. What do they know that the rest of us do not? Successful companies spend much more time figuring out how to be more innovative. Small agile development teams have emerged as a cornerstone strategy. Their organization is designed, which encourages discovery, experimentation, and self-governance, produces significant benefits, not least of which is speed. When agile teams are employed, parent companies get more innovation attempts per dollar. But in leading companies, agile-like teams are only the start, not the end, of the pursuit of innovation. New product development leaders have recognized that agile teams still lack critical knowledge about what makes products successful from a marketing standpoint. No surprise, these agile teams are made up of developers who are mostly engineers. Okay, I'm going to pose the first question just to warm up the room, which is always, please introduce yourself, where you are tweeting from, and your involvement with product management. Two, what is the definition of a leading company? Before I post that, I will be quiet and let Ron and Nick have something to say here.
Okay. Thank you again, Cindy. So I'm in San Jose. We're apparently not too far away from each other at the moment, probably about 70 miles or 60 miles. I am associated through you. We met about 6 months ago when I was giving a talk at the Silicon Valley Product Management Association. So again, thanks for the invitation to join today. So I wrote the book. This is just kind of a brief introduction. We can get into it, into some of the questions in much more detail. But I wrote the book because there is a need, in my opinion, to provide a much greater understanding of some basic marketing principles, even for technical people. Because of the way agile teams are developed and run, they tend to run autonomously. There is a need for that kind of information, and that's what the book was all about.
Well, Ron, one of the things that I've been quite interested in looking at your background is the extension of agile into other parts of the business, that when you talk about the cross-functional teams, you seem to incorporate not just a development team or an engineering team, but elements of the entire business.
Yeah. Agile has taken on kind of a broad conceptual meaning. I know that there's very specific implementations, Scrum and extreme programming and that sort of thing. But in general, the agile concept has also come to mean a project that is designed to move quickly, a project that is designed to accommodate unforeseen changes in sort of a seamless, natural way, and projects that turn to customers for primary input. So if you look at the manifesto for Agile, for example, you'll see customers are ranked number one. That's always been part of the Agile methodology. People talk about Agile in a lot of contexts now in the Valley and even outside of the Valley. And it's synonymous now with efforts that just are designed to move very quickly and sort of lead with customer input, which I think is a good thing. Agile is a very powerful trend in Silicon Valley. There's companies outside of the software environment that are starting to investigate it. It applies even to hardware, although you don't have as much flexibility in terms of changes. But the concept of putting the customer first and accommodating unforeseen changes as they come in, as opposed to the waterfall method, which is a development process that often has unforeseen changes sort of build up at the end of the process. Agile is designed to accommodate those changes real time. And so it's a very powerful development tool.
Great. I think that's very exciting because it's certainly been one of the challenges when we're working with product managers. They're often caught like the deer in the headlights by a development team who's gone agile and without necessarily having a way of embracing that new activity and being able to work with it rather than being almost a victim of it.
Right. Agile is the concept as much as a specific technique. There's a lot of agile methodologies under the umbrella, but it's a way of thinking as much as anything else today.
Our first question that we had for the participants and that we can discuss from your point of view the definition of a leading company?
Well, there's a very specific definition, which is that a leading company generates much more revenue from new products. So if you think about the ways to grow a company, you can grow in an existing market with an existing product. You can grow in a new market with an existing product. The big wins are new products and new markets. So one of the metrics for tracking that is to look at how much revenue a company gets from a new products, which by definition have been introduced in a fairly recent time frame, usually about 12 months prior. And leading companies have more than twice the revenue from new products compared to their less aggressive peers, I guess. It's a metric for general health of the company.
Okay, so you're actually educating us on your languaging and your approach to how you viewed, how you defined who the leading companies are and how you measure them. And I want to welcome Beta Boy, who is Richard, joining us from Sydney in the room. So how you define leading companies were by how much revenue the company gets from new products.
Yeah, and there's companies obviously like Google that get a lot of revenue from relatively new products. It depends on how you define them. But this is a definition that extends well beyond high tech. It's a general benchmark or metric for companies in all industries. The notion is that if you're innovating, if you're developing new products, you get a lot of benefits. You get ahead of the competition. You're able to charge higher margin generally for your products. The epitome of all that, of course, is Apple. I read that over half their revenue now comes from the iPhones. So the concept of basic corporate health being driven by a company's ability to create successful new products is sort of the cornerstone idea. And then the question is, how do you do that? Well, you have to be innovative. And being innovative has a lot of dimensions to it. But the cornerstone activity there is how a team goes about its business, how it's able to work through problems and pursue strategies and deal with obstacles. And agile methodologies have sort of emerged as a way to do that. So agile equals innovation equals leading companies or healthy companies is the basic structure of the thinking process.
John Newbery says, in answer to question two, which is what is the definition of a leading company, he said, we're measuring the KPI innovation as a percentage of sales. Based on what you mentioned, it's less of a focus on traditional measurements.
Yes, it is kind of the be-all, end-all metric for a lot of companies. If you're not producing and launching new products, and there's a lot of anecdotal information floating around the valley about, you know, companies launching products early. They do that so they can get feedback quickly from a real product, but they also do it just to kind of keep stoking the innovation engine. And so leading companies, companies that are more profitable than their peers, are better innovators. So yes, the KPI of innovation is sort of the be-all, end-all measurement for corporate performance.
So the leading companies are those that are leading in innovation?
They're leading in innovation. It's productive innovation in the sense that it's turning into real products that customers buy, that they can charge a higher price for, get a strong margin. They're not commodity products. They're highly differentiated. All those things are kind of bundled together under the innovation heading. Those companies do a better job at that, and therefore they're more profitable, and therefore they're growing faster than their competition. And agile teams, sort of the second question, I mean, agile teams are fundamental to that. There's lots of things that go into the equation, that for the innovation equation, but teams are the main thing that go into it. How do those teams get organized? How do they get focused? How do they stay on track? What is the role for senior management in an agile team relationship? What should senior management provide? How should they evaluate the performance? Everything sort of begins and ends with teams, agile teams. Agile in the more general definition of being just very fluid. Their purpose is to move quickly. Their purpose is to make decisions intuitively, but based on a good understanding of customers. So again, sort of back to the thought process before, successful companies or innovative companies have successful agile teams.
Welcome, I'm Music Mash. He's also in the Valley, and he asks, both you and John Newbery, how is innovation calculated in that innovation is a percentage of the sales metric.
Innovation is a component of a successful product. So the real measurement for these large firms is how many new products are they launching and how successful are those products. So innovation is really not measured in its own right. It's a function of product success or product sales from new products. So if you're able to do that, by definition, you're an innovator product. There's lots of definitions for innovation. But when I wrote the book, I went out and I talked to a lot of large companies. And the way senior management was thinking about innovation was very much in a dollars and cents way. I mean, they, you know, a product is innovative if it breaks ground in a new market, if customers buy it, if we can charge a good price for it. So the iPhone is an innovative product. It's not innovative because of some definition of innovation, although, again, there's lots of really good definitions of innovation. The iPhone is an innovative product because it created a new category of mobile device, and it was very successful doing that. Same can be said for iPad. I mean, there's lots of examples at Apple, but there's lots of examples at other companies as well. I mean, 3M and Google and dozens of other companies are innovative, but management decides that they're an innovative company if they're able to generate sales in new markets, as it should be. I think that's the right way to look at the business.
John Newbery answered, innovation is calculated is how many sales are generated from products launched in the last 24 months compared to the total number of sales.
Exactly. That's exactly it. And if you're a company like Apple, it's obviously more than just the iPhone. Could be as much as 80%. The basic transition that Apple has gone through from a computer company to a smartphone company is the most dramatic example out there, although there's other examples of companies introducing breakthrough products.
Q3 was, how do agile teams fit into their strategy? By there, we mean into the leading company's strategy.
So they're fundamental. They have, agile teams have come about in large companies because of the success of agile teams in startups. Large companies, generally speaking, are not very good at innovation, and yet they want to be. I mean, I've seen lots and lots of surveys where if you ask senior management what's their number one need as a company, number one desire, they'll say they want to be more innovative. And then if you ask them if they're successful being innovative, they'll say, no, not very. There is a gap between what they want to do and what they can do. So innovation is top of mind for large companies and has been for probably forever, at least the last 50 years, but they recognize they're not very good at it. And so they tend to try to emulate what's going on in tech centers, in particular, like Silicon Valley. So they'll look at startups and they'll talk to venture capitalists and they'll talk to entrepreneurs and they'll say to themselves, we want entrepreneurial teams, we want agile teams, let's try that and see if it doesn't produce a better result. And so inside large companies, you'll see the development of agile teams. And part of being an agile team within a large company, it's sort of a non-issue in a startup, but in a large company, it means that they're given a fair amount of autonomy. It's important that agile teams are able to figure it out for themselves, not have a lot of tight supervision and monitoring. So the role of an agile team inside a larger company, and I think that's all right. I think if large companies want to be more innovative, emulating an entrepreneurial environment or an entrepreneurial team is exactly the way to think about it. But it's not built into their DNA the way it's built into a lot of startups in the Valley.
Ron, I've got a question for you. In terms of your use of the term agile, I'm feeling like it's kind of co-opted from the agile movement, but you're using it more as the verb it was before the agile movement got a hold of it.
Well, sort of. I mean, it has been co-opted from the agile movement, and that's kind of been this, you know, this grounds-up movement that has sort of taken new product development over, at least it has in the Valley. And so, yes, I'm using it in a way that an agile team that has been trained in agile development techniques probably, you know, doesn't recognize it as sort of a precise definition. I'm using it in a much more general way. I think that that's, I mean, it's almost unavoidable. It's not me that's doing it. I hear that in conversations with senior managers.
Right.
They want agile teams. but they don't. They certainly don't understand what Scrum is. They certainly don't understand what extreme programming is. They certainly haven't been trained. They're not a Scrum master. But they're hearing this word. They're hearing this movement, and they want to be a part of it. They equate it more with being entrepreneurial.
Right.
So it may be, purists may say, hey, you're using the definition of agile inappropriately, but I think it's a good thing because I think it helps large companies sort of recognize the need to emulate these small startup or entrepreneurial teams.
Right.
I'm a great believer in agile. I believe that, and again, I'm using it as sort of the general sense, but
yep.
But if agile has three legs to the stool, if you will, built for speed, excited about handling unforeseen changes or obstacles sort of in the due course of the working day, and they're committed to turning to customers as a way to figure out how to handle those problems and obstacles, if that's the definition of agile, which is certainly the way I hear it when I talk to senior managers, I think that that's a very good thing. And agile development can apply, I think, to even non-products, but I don't want to get too far away from the core discussion.
Ken Shalinda has joined us from Shanghai.
Fantastic.
And he hasn't yet made a comment, but he is following the stream. Our fourth question was, what is the most important skill a developer can have?
At the end of 2010, there was a major study done by IBM, and IBM went out and talked to 1,500 CEOs in very large companies. I think it represented some 30 industries and over 60 different countries, very comprehensive study. And they asked CEOs what was the most critical need in their companies in the 21st century going forward from now. And sort of the context for that is all the globalization that's been going on, all the commoditization that's been going on with products. And they said above anything else, they needed creativity. And so the answer to the question, what's the most important skill a developer can have? Is creativity. Engineers, as it turns out, are an extremely creative bunch. They tend to be more introverts than extroverts. I mean, we could talk a lot about the engineer profile and, you know, in a general sense, but they're very creative when they understand the framework that they want to develop within. And it's obvious the products that we see on the market from companies, how creative and intuitive they are. It can be mind-blowing at times. That is a skill that can lie dormant, though, because engineers, actually most of us, but certainly engineers, have been trained in critical thinking skills rather than creative thinking skills, and there's a big difference. It's just the way our educational system has developed. It's certainly the way corporations operate. And so one of the things that an agile team needs is a lot of support and encouragement to be creative and the freedom to do so. The tools to do so, sometimes it requires training, but the best agile teams are ones that the teams that are most innovative are almost by definition the most creative. And that creativity really has to be unleashed. When I talk to people, that becomes the most critical skill. Developers have it or don't have it, and those that don't have it can certainly develop it, but they may have learned to kind of suppress it because of the nature of critical thinking.
So, Rob, when you're talking about developers here, generally, we in product management, we kind of think of things in terms of the problem side of the equation and the solution side of the equation. And product managers often straddle both sides, but primarily own the problem that they're trying to solve in the marketplace to create opportunities for the business and also create value for customers. Do you see that the agile developer here embracing both the problem and solution side from a creativity perspective?
Yeah, absolutely, because one of the key elements of agile development is staying close to the customer. And if you do that, you will find that you're solving problems in the most relevant way possible. It's also the source of creativity. If you understand the problem from a customer's perspective, and they may not be able to tell you, I mean, I just as an aside, you know, I worked at an advertising agency called BBDO, and BBDO created a research technique called the problem detection study. And before the problem detection study, I don't know when it was developed, but I'm guessing that it was developed in the early 70s. You know, when you work at BBDO, you learn about that in great depth. And so before that, researchers would have focus groups and they would bring in prospects, potential customers, and they would ask those customers what they would like to have in a product. What was missing. And it usually didn't yield very much because a person off the street doesn't know what's possible. And they often say things that people who are immersed in a product 24/7 have already thought of and maybe rejected because it costs too much or the technology's not ready or whatever.
Yep.
But before the problem detection study, they would get a bunch of things to work on, but they would find the list wasn't very useful. The problem detection study took a whole different tact. It said, forget about what is being offered today. Tell me about the problems that you're having in this category. And so I'll give you an example outside of high tech. Let's just say the category is flashlights. In the old way, you know, you'd walk into a focus group environment and there'd be flashlights from maybe 8 competitors and people would hold them and touch them and turn them on. And they would say, oh, we'd like to have long battery life and we'd like to have a brighter light and we would like to have this and that. And when you went and investigated brighter light, you would find that it's too expensive to incorporate that, and a certain amount of light is adequate anyway, and the batteries are what the batteries are. That's, they're made by third parties, etc. But in the problem detection study, you might hear somebody in a focus group say, well, you know, I broke down the other night on the side of the road, and I couldn't find my flashlight. And so all of a sudden, then, you've identified a problem area, and you can use the creativity of the development team to solve that problem in an elegant fashion. Agile development is as much about finding the problem as it is about finding the solution, because agile development is about staying in tune with what the customer is all about. They may not tell you what they need, but they're generally very, very capable of telling you what the problem is. In fact, they like to talk about problems.
Right. When you were talking about the difference between the agile developer and the agile team, I think that's where there may be a slight disconnect, because I see the role of the developer in an agile team as to come up with creative solutions.
Right.
But another role potentially within the agile team to be attuned to those customer problems.
Right. You're absolutely right. And that distinction is important. That is more of a definition of a role than the solution side and the problem side are using agile techniques in a sense to get what they need. If Agile is about understanding customers and the way they do what they do and what they're trying to solve, what their goals are, both sides, the problem and the solution side, I need to use Agile techniques. But I understand that there's a split in responsibility.
And I guess that's where we see when product management teams are trying to interact with an Agile team. This is usually the area of the most consternation or friction, when the product management team is using tried and true non-Agile process to capture that information and then trying to mesh that with a development team which is using agile methodologies. Unless that product manager and that external business function is brought into that agile process, then the two seem to be working at cross purposes achieve the exact goals that you're referring to.
They have to be part of the same agile development process. The product manager, I think, has to be part of the agile development team. And that may be true with other functional responsibilities as well that are somewhat removed from development. Finance is a good example. An agile team is a unit that is chartered with developing an innovative product. And within that unit, the product manager has a role, and engineers have a role, developers have a role. And even a finance person has a role.
Right.
The problem with Agile is a great idea, great concept. The problem with Agile is that engineers and developers kind of came up with the Agile approach to business, to product development on their own. And they did it out of frustration with waterfall approaches, right? I mean, if you had a lot of late-stage rework, who did it fall on? It fell on the engineers and the developers. It falls on everybody, but it falls on the engineers. And so this concept has been organic, you know, ground up, but corporations are not providing agile teams with the right tools. Here's an important example. I've seen a lot of MRDs in companies. I've seen a lot of PRD, product requirements documents and market requirement documents. And MRDs can be 50 pages or more. I've actually never seen one that was complete, because as soon as the products starts development, things change so quickly you almost can't rewrite the MRD fast enough. There needs to be documentation tools that are designed for the agile environment. So you have an agile team and you have a documentation tool that's very important that is built for completely different development environment. So while agile is really good as a development process, corporations just are not adapting their way of doing business fast enough to give the teams what they need.
Right.
There are tools. They're for the technical developers as opposed for, well, there are different levels of tools. I haven't seen tools that enable MRDs that can be consumed by upper management, but those tools do enable the team.
Yeah, but the tools can be simplified. When I started working, one of the clients that the agency had was a brand within Procter & Gamble, and those guys had to write their entire 12-month business plan on one page. I'm not sure you need 50 pages to describe the essence of what's needed in the development process. Agencies use a document called the creative brief. That's how an account manager, which is the equivalent of a product manager, hands off input to a development team, which inside of an agency are, you know, copywriters and art directors and stuff like that. Those tend to be one page, and one page is a restriction by design. It forces people to think much more clearly. It forces prioritization, that sort of thing. Those are the kinds of documents that I think product development teams should be using in the Agile environment. And it's easy enough to get management's approval on those kinds of documents. In addition to that, I think it's clear that management should subscribe and define a vision, but it's up to the Agile team to figure out how to create a product to achieve that vision. Management can hurt an Agile team by being way too hands-on and too restrictive.
Beta Boy said it's easy for Agile teams to lose sight of the customer problem during implementation and development, and so the product manager needs to keep it on point. Henschelender had said he found another useful approach is job to be done, introduced by Ad Ulrich and at Clay Christensen.
Yeah, job to be done is a great concept. If you just wrote the job to be done on a single sheet of paper, you would serve the team much better than having a 50-page market requirements document. I mean, somebody needs to understand the numbers, the market sizing. They need to understand regulatory requirements and stuff like that. But the development team really just needs to primarily to get inside the customer's head, understand what the problem is. There's a lot of approaches. I'm not trying to be black and white. There's certainly shades of gray. But what happens is that I've seen MRDs handed off to a development team and they still don't know exactly what they should be developing. They have a description, but they don't really have a feeling for the problem the way the customer is experiencing, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely. And I think quite often there's a confusion between what the business wants and what the problem is that they're trying to solve for the customer.
Yeah,
you know,
and
they often describe the business problem, not the customer problem.
Exactly. That's a better way of saying it. And I think that management certainly needs to understand the business problem and the business solution. But I think for the development team, if you want them to be creative, let them develop for a specific job that needs to get done and let them think about how the interface should look, how the product should be designed. Let them unleash their creativity at that point. Don't put a lot of restrictions on them. I mean, the goal here is to unleash rather than try to constrain what the development team thinks about and how they come up with ideas.
Beta Boy cited a discussion on Quora where they're talking about Amazon product development process, and they start by listing the benefits to the customer, and then they build a press release around that, and I guess that launches their part of the process. So I guess if they can get it into a one-page press release, that defines their problem.
Well, the one-page thinking is a way to force clear thinking. You have to make decisions about what sentence to include and what sentence to take out. And so it really forces clarity. And I think, and that in itself is a huge advantage. Amazon is really good at understanding the customers, and talking about benefits is the traditional method of doing it. Not product features, but benefits. That's another way of saying what I'm really talking about. But we get stuck sometimes on features rather than benefits, or we get stuck on, well, we don't see the forest for the trees sometimes, and that's a problem. We try to give too much to the development team and leave it up to them to decide what's important, and that it shouldn't work that way.
I agree. John Newbery is agreeing with Beta Boy, who says that market information and strategy should come from marketing. Product managers should work on the solution, and the Agile team should work on delivery.
Yeah, and if you look at a startup team in the Valley, one that has just been funded. If you look at the decks that they use to get funding, for example, there's certainly information there about the market. Once you say, okay, there's an opportunity here, let's go after it, it becomes very much a focus on the problem. And so there's business decisions that need to be made. John's got it right. You know, the Agile team should have core input, and then they should have the freedom to develop solutions as they think are right. They have an obligation to understand the customer as well. John's got it right in that post.
So our next two questions were Q5, how do you determine what customers need? I think we're speaking to that. And I think we already answered Q6, what is the most important business skill for the 21st century?
That's creativity. We answered that.
Creativity.
Yeah.
So then Q7 is, what is the reason Agile is gaining in popularity in large companies, which I believe you answered that as well.
Large companies just aren't very good at innovation, so they look around them, particularly to the startup community. Silicon Valley and places like Silicon Valley, Austin, and others are viewed as innovation engines. You know, they have a much better handle on what is innovation. How do you make breakthrough successful products? It used to be the companies would just say, oh, we'll acquire whatever solution gets traction in the market. And that's still a primary strategy today. But companies are trying to be more innovative in their own right. And they look to the Valley and they see Agile, and so they talk about Agile. It's the topic of the day in these large companies.
So whether they do Agile successfully or not is another issue.
Yeah, I mean, it's faddish to talk about Agile. And that doesn't mean that large companies aren't serious about trying to crack the code. But you know how topics become popular for a while. This one's been popular for at least the last 3 years. In large companies, and some have actually implemented extremely well, and others haven't.
Beta Boy says that speed to market is critical, competition is fierce, and Agile can get you across that line.
Yes. I mean, if the answer to the question, how do I be more competitive, how do I deal with all this clutter in the marketplace, the answer is innovative products, and Agile gets you innovative products better than any other development technique that I can think of. Yes, once everybody could develop offshore, once very large contract manufacturers got up to speed in places like China, they took all comers. Apple develops with large contract manufacturers in China, but so does Dell, so does everybody else. And so you'll be hard-pressed to get an advantage from cost savings. There's only two strategies. According to the expert, this is one of the Christensen stories, there's only cost, leadership, and innovation, what he calls differentiation. And you can't do it on cost cutting. You can't be the low-cost leader anymore. Even Walmart is having trouble being the low-cost leader. You have to do it on innovation. So the only answer to being competitive in today's environment is being able to produce innovative products.
Excellent. So welcome to Khan, who came into the room. He said, Agile is the shiny new, but not really that new thing. And who doesn't want to be Agile? Answering question 6, Nick said that creativity supports the solution side of the product, and he believes that the most important business skill is imagination, which I think goes hand in hand with creativity. I think it's synonymous.
Actually, I think that the imagination allows you to imagine almost impossible problems to solve, and then the creativity side of the process is trying to work out how to solve those impossible problems. It's when we see things that we previously thought of as being impossible and imagine that they might be possible, that we suddenly find products and services that blow our minds and change the marketplace. Without that imagination to free yourself to think beyond what's possible today, no amount of creativity to solve those problems is going to create an innovative product.
That's right. And so, agree with you?
Creative experts will draw a distinction between imagination and ideas, and yet being able to see the big picture, being able to come up with a vision or a direction that no one else is thinking of, that's terribly important.
John Newbery said the traditional product development approach is not delivering shareholder returns fast enough to be acceptable. That's why I built Fast Track. And just, where do you look for ideas internally? And what is the surprise element of business model?
So there's one comment that draws a distinction between agile process and agile culture, Mr. Khan. The process, having the freedom to fail, is a very big part of the agile culture. You have to have the freedom to try things, and if those things don't work out, you have to be able to experiment. And by definition, when you're experimenting, some things are not going to work. Those are constraints that traditional companies put on agile teams that cause failure from the get-go. They set all kinds of goals for agile teams that are inappropriate for agile teams. A good example is so much revenue in the first year. Well, who knows? I mean, you're developing a new product that you certainly want it to be successful. You want to generate a lot of money. You're going to build margin into it and all that, but you don't know how fast it's going to get traction. The more innovative, the harder it is to tell if that product's going to be successful. But you got to be supported in your efforts to try things to see if they'll work.
I suppose, where do you look for ideas internally? And Beta Boy says, always look to customer services. He loves hearing why people are no longer customers.
That's in response to question 8.
Yes, where to look for ideas internally.
Certainly customer service is a great place for ideas. The answer to that question is there are ideas all over the company as well as ideas that come from the customer. Companies are funny organisms. I can walk into a company and I can talk to a handful of people and they'll tell me about great ideas that have never been developed and they're still valid today. They're so good that they've been carried sort of from one generation to the next. And why these ideas don't get implemented has a lot to do with corporate culture and their inability to kind of give teams the freedom they need to try new stuff. But you talk to somebody that's been in a large company for 10 years, they have by osmosis picked up a whole lot of stuff from the marketplace, and they have this intuitive sense of what's needed to be done. And there's often a handful of ideas inside of companies that should be put on a track to get developed immediately that just haven't. So you can get ideas from everywhere. You can get ideas just by walking around and seeing how other things work. Da Vinci did this. You know, he kept a notebook and he would go out and look at the natural world and he would make drawings and he'd come back and that would generate ideas for him to create devices that nobody had ever seen before. I don't know anybody in the advertising business on the creative side that doesn't have a notebook where they draw ideas and write down notes and stuff like that. I think engineers should be a lot more like creative people inside of agencies, for example. I mean, they certainly have the intellectual and creative horsepower to do it. It's just that they've never been given the freedom to think that way. That's not true across the board. Of course, there's innovative companies where the developers are given a lot of freedom to develop, and product managers and everybody else involved with getting a new product to market.
We could have a debate about this because Saeed Khan says ideas are rarely found internally. You must look to potential users or the market for problems to be solved. And I think it's an issue of what kinds of problems we want to solve. John Newbery suggests that suppliers can be a valuable and often underutilized source of innovation idea. So we're talking about whether we're discussing incremental innovation or new.
One of the great historical examples of supplier innovation is Toyota. One of the things Toyota did was to work with outside suppliers when Japan was building the car business after the Second World War. And they weren't vertically integrated the way Ford and General Motors were. And these outside suppliers were a great source of ideas. Procter & Gamble today has a program called Connect and Develop, where it asks its suppliers to provide ideas. McDonald's got the idea for the Big Mac from a franchisee. The fish sandwich came from a franchisee, which technically are not internal people, although you could say they are. So it's a matter of, it all comes from the customer. I mean, whoever came up with the Big Mac, I've got to believe that they came up with the idea after talking to customers, after interacting with customers and sort of absorbing or synthesizing what the customer was after, and then using their own knowledge to come up with a solution.
Beta Boy had retreated. We need a culture where failure equals learning and improvement. That supports an agile team.
Business models have two parts to them. One is a part that describes the financial opportunity or the transaction, and the other is a part that focuses on the story that the product tells. That second part is usually never thought of when people are talking about business models. And the source of that is a lady at Harvard. Her name is Joan Magretta. I'm not sure of her role now. She was a professor. I think she's involved with one of Harvard's innovation initiatives. But the idea of business model being a framework for developing a product story is something that is always missing. People are always surprised when I bring that up. And that's what question 9 was all about. It's a long discussion about business models that we probably don't have time for, but how you talk about a product is as important as the product itself. That's
okay. All right. Let me get that as the bottom line. How you talk about a product is as important as the product itself. Excellent. Thank you very much, Ron, for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
And my pleasure. It was a lot of fun. It's a great service you're offering, Cindy. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you again, Nick Koster, for joining me as co-host.
Nice
Thanks, Ron.
You.